Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we get to talk about how great teaching the restored gospel of Jesus Christ is. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Kevin. How's it going?
Wonderful, and I'm really excited about today because it's just not you and I, right? We get a third to join us today, and this is really great because this person has taught a ton. Any intro you want to throw in there before we jump in? Please do.
I have been excited about this for a really long time. I say a really long time because I wanted him to come on before we even asked him to come on. And then when this all came about, I was absolutely thrilled. The thing that I'm going to wait. So I've been listening to podcasts by him for quite some time. So can we tell him who it is and bring him on so that
sure.
I can tell story about how...
Hi, Casey
Griffith!
Hi! How are you?
Good. Okay, so I will give my little intro really fast. I've been listening to Church History Matters for quite some time, and it was one of those podcasts that really helped me when I was teaching the adult religion class for our stake. And it was something that I would go back to because it gave such a great connection between difficult topics and the spirit of what we could potentially communicate and focus on, and really helped me to kind of process through mentally and emotionally some of the things that were a little And then as time has continued, they've taken on the Come Follow Me curriculum for this year with the Doctrine and Covenants, and they've segmented it out to be this well-organized thing for my linear brain where they talk about, you know, what is, I remember it's context, content, consequences. No. Controversies and consequences related to these different sections of the Doctrine and Covenants. And so it's been awesome. And then I was on a walk with my son early Sunday morning. I have a son with special needs and he's 17 and he looks like Buddy the Elf, and I push him in the stroller and his knees are like up to his neck. And we're walking along on a Sunday morning because he woke up at oh dark 30. And the first thing that pops up on my podcast is this new series on teaching. And I'm like, well, that would be helpful. And so I listened to the first episode, which happened to have just dropped like a day or two earlier. And it was a limited series done by Why Religion on teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so this is so cool to me, and I'm so excited to now nerd out with you. But maybe you should give a little bit of an introduction beyond my myopic view of who you are, because I'm really excited.
So a little introduction on myself. I'm a teacher. You know, when people ask me, what do I do? That's the first thing that pops into my head. I do a little research and I do a few things here and there, but I've been a teacher all my adult life. And I love teaching. I started out in seminaries and institutes, taught there for a number of years, became a curriculum writer. And I like being a curriculum writer, but I just missed the classroom. And so I only spent about a year at church headquarters writing curriculum, and then found a position at BYU where I could teach, and eventually got hired full-time at BYU. And I've been here for a little over 10 years. I teach big sections, lots of kids. I usually teach the introduction to church history class, which is called Foundations of the Restoration. And then another class that focuses on the family proclamation called the Eternal Family. And so, you know, I live, eat, and breathe teaching. And this series was really an attempt to try and help teachers take advantage of some of the resources I've had for a really long time, which is that I am surrounded and have been for my entire career by some of the best teachers in the church. And I get to have conversations with them. I get to talk to them. I get to steal from them. I'll just be blatantly honest and say that I steal a lot of my stuff. When I see a good idea, I immediately, you know, take it and patent it on my own. And I wanted to give other people the same opportunity. So this is a passion project for me in a lot of ways that I've wanted to do for many years. And I'm so thankful that the administration here at BYU gave me the time and the resources to get this done. So I'm really, really thrilled that it's out there.
So really, you're allowing us to steal from you now. So thank you. That's great.
Well, no. The format is that I interview two really good teachers, which it gave me an excuse to do that to begin with. So, you know, Hank Smith and I have had parallel careers, for instance, like we got hired in seminary at the same time and we came to BYU at the same exact time. Mm-hmm. But I've never had a chance to sit down and talk to Hank about his craft. Oh. You know, like, how do you do this? And Hank is one of the best teachers I've ever known. And he's just one of, you know, dozens that we interview on this podcast. And I never, you know, in all the years we've known each other, we've been friends for decades, had the chance to sit down and say, so how do you do this? Like what's your main philosophy? And it was just a pleasure to get to sit down with people like him and Anthony Sweat and Tyler Griffin and, Barbara Gardner and all these incredible teachers that I spend time with talking about what we do and what our craft is basically, and how we try and reach the hearts of the students that the Lord's put into our stewardship.
That is pretty incredible.
So for anyone who listens to this podcast, you are going to want to go over and listen to that podcast. It is rich. I'm caught up in terms of the episodes that you've done so far. You've mentioned some names that I have not yet had the pleasure of listening to. So I'm excited for what is still to come in the limited series. Is it 11 episodes? How many episodes is it?
Yeah, from the beginning, we wanted it to be an 11-episode series, or a limited series, I should say. We didn't have a set number of episodes. But what the idea was is I got made the teaching fellow on our faculty. And we have a diverse faculty that is all over the place. And we have a number of part-time teachers that come in, too. And it is just really difficult to wrestle them all into one room. Yeah. And so we came up with the idea of, what if we made a podcast that was designed to train them, and then it could be available whenever they needed to, when they were driving somewhere or mowing their lawn or making dinner or, you know, taking your son for a walk, you could listen to it. And it originally started out as just something that was going to be intro our faculty. But the more we discussed it, the more we realized, hey, everybody in the church is a teacher. And so we felt like this was something that could really benefit a lot of people, and we decided to just put it on Why Religion, which is our biggest platform, to try and reach as many people as possible. Because the other thing I do is, in my ward, I'm the Sunday school president. And, you know, getting all the teachers in my ward into a single room to do a training is...
That's tough.
Incredibly frustrating, you know, especially in summer when everybody's traveling. And so I'm hoping when this is done, that when we get a new gospel doctrine teacher, I can go and say, hey, here's 11 episodes, consume them on your own time. But by the time you're done with this, you'll have some really good teachers talk you through the basics of how to teach the gospel and how to be a successful gospel teacher.
Wow. So you're Sunday school president, teaching your work, you're teaching, you're doing a podcast, which is teaching. I mean, you're pretty much, I mean, that is what you're doing all the time. I mean, from all of those, you had to have picked up just a huge amount, especially interviewing others. You know, tips and tricks and things, but it's almost as if the tips and tricks that people use are very generic, I would almost say, in a way, because it's this thing that we hear all the times that we go, oh yeah, of course I'll do that. But those sometimes seem to be the most powerful things, the mm-hmm. ones that we almost take for granted. Would you agree with that?
Oh yeah. And that's part of it is there's some things that just work. And when we sat down with these teachers, there were some common themes that came through the entire thing, where pretty much everybody was saying, here's my best trick. Here's what works. And there's a similarity to it. You know, good, solid teaching is going to be similar in some ways. At the same time, too, one question that we wrestle with is teaching an art or a science?
You know? Sure.
Because mm-hmm. on the one hand, you know, if we were teaching artists, we wouldn't go to them and say, no, you need to be more like Van Gogh. They've got their own style. They've got their own uniqueness. You know, a Picasso is totally different than a Van Gogh, totally different from a Monet. And teachers can be that way too. So I think one thing that came across in all the interviews was that everybody that I spoke to agreed that, one, the first thing is to teach to your strengths. You know, if you're really good at something, don't put it aside. I love history, and I like to talk about history, and that's one of my strengths. And so I play to that when I'm in the classroom. At the same time, too, even a Picasso or a Van Gogh or a Monet can learn technique and can get better at what they do. So there's a natural gift that comes, but if a person doesn't use the gift and refine it and stretch themselves, they are going to become stagnant eventually. So we're pulling between those two things. So number one, teaching is an art, and sometimes you can't tell an artist how to do it because they've got their own way of doing it. But any artist can learn by listening to other artists and hearing what they have to say. And that was part of the reason why we came up with the format. It is when we're doing an episode on teaching by the spirit or asking good questions, we decided instead of just hearing from one person, we wanted to hear from two. And they might have totally different approaches to how they do it, but both are equally valid and both are just giving you things that you can put into your toolbox that you'll use when you're in the classroom. So some stuff is very generic. It can be used by any teacher. And some stuff is very specific that you might be able to adapt, or you might be able to sit back and say, you know what, that person can get away with that, but I don't know if I can. And again, it's just kind of an approach to give you as many tools as possible to accomplish the task that you've been given.
Well, in that vein, like the topic teaching by the spirit, for example, I was going through and I remember coming across that one and I'm like, well, duh. And so I almost skipped it. That's but I'm like, because I know that, right? But then I saw who you were interviewing and I was like, oh no, I want to listen. I was amazed at how much meat there was. I feel like sometimes, and this is me just throwing myself under the bus, we're a little bit dismissive of things that we feel like we have a good grasp on. Well, teaching by the spirit's important, that we kind of would be like, whoop, and not listen as closely and as clearly. I have so many notes from that one. And so I would encourage people to not do that. Like there's a lot of tried, true, tested, whatever in the basics, and being willing to invest and listen with fresh ears. I think there's a lot of meat in these. I can attest to that.
Teaching by the Spirit was one of those that I thought, like, how do you define that? Like, nobody in the church can define it. And so for that episode, we lined Hank Smith and Ryan Sharp, who were two of the best teachers I've ever known. And they blew my mind, too. Like, I listened to it and was getting new insights. You know, it was interesting because Hank starts by saying, I don't know if I can define what teaching by the Spirit is, but I can tell you what it isn't. And then he listed off a whole bunch of stuff that made me go, oh, yeah. And again, you can think of it as we're covering a specific topic, but you can also think of it as we're just taking these expert teachers and letting them sort of explain how they do what they do. And I think anybody out there would say that if you're invested in something, there's a thrill in seeing somebody who's really good at do it. Like there is a thrill in watching a professional athlete, whether they're a football player or a gymnast, just do their thing and be amazing. And it's the same thing with teaching. For some reason, we haven't elevated teaching to, you know, the same level as sports or entertainment. But a good teacher, I mean, when I was sitting there talking to them, and when I get a chance to see them teach, I'm constantly sitting there going, oh my goodness, this is a pleasure to see somebody that loves what they do and too is really good at it, is just a thrilling thing in its own sense. And that's why this was so fun to put together, is I got to talk to some people that really, really have thought deeply about this and love it deeply, and just listen to them go, like hear what they have to say, just soak it up. Yeah. And so we did try to give like specific episode titles, you know, this one's on asking questions, and this one is on, you know, one-on-one counseling and everything like that. But at the same time too, part of the utility of the series is just to hear good people who are good at what they do talk about how they do it.
Well, I know you are no slouch in that as well, because I was telling my family, hey, you know, on our next interview, we're interviewing Casey, and my daughter was at Education Week a couple of years ago and was in your class and was like, she totally remembers it and was very excited for you to come on our podcast. And so, and absolutely loved that session that you did. And I guess it was several sessions. So having you here, there are actually, let me ask you this. In your bio, in your regular bio online, it talks about the development of religious education programs. You said you wrote some of the
curriculum,
right? But it sounds like it's more than that you've been involved with, and more than just that year overall, is it not?
I mean, I was at Church Headquarters for a year, and I was writing curriculum. I don't know if I contributed very much. There's a story I tell about curriculum and the way it works in the church, where they asked me to write an introduction to the book of Job. And I love Job. It's one of my favorite books. But the thing about Job is it history or is it literature? Like, on the one hand,
right,
I do believe there was a person named Job. On the other hand, I don't think God and Satan, you know, take bets on how much they can torture a guy. I think that's a literary framing device. And so in curriculum, I wrote a 6-page introduction to the book of Job that like weighed those two things. And then I sent it to Correlation. And I think what ended up in the final manual was, we do not know who wrote the book of Job. Like the church just didn't want to take a stance on what they officially teach about the book of Job. And so sense, I wasn't an outstanding curriculum writer. But what they did have me do, and what I spent a lot of my time at Church Headquarters doing, was writing the history of seminaries and institutes. Seminaries and institutes had just barely passed its centennial, and they were working on a history called By Study and Also by Faith. It's in the Gospel Library. And some other great people helped with that too, Randy Hall and Ken and Audra Godfrey. But that was also an amazing thing, because I got to study the history of teaching in the church and kind of go back to the foundational elements of why teaching was such a big deal. For instance, the Kirtland Temple was really as much a school as it was a temple. You know, they do some ordinances there, but not the way we do them now. And the second entire floor of the Kirtland Temple was called the House of Learning and was devoted specifically to gospel teaching, other kinds of teaching too, but I guess gospel teaching encompasses all. And I didn't realize that the Lord, you know, in the Doctrine and Covenants just emphasizes over and over again the importance of learning, the importance of good teaching, the magic, the power that comes when we sit down and we have a discussion with an inspired teacher leading the discussion to really change hearts and lives. And it seems like everything that the church idealizes was found in that first temple. And then as the church developed, we kind of split it off into its own thing. But if someone asked me, you know, where was the first church university? It's the Kirtland Temple. Later on, we decide to have a separate building for the school and a separate building for the ordinances. But really, that one building, a house of learning, a house of fasting, a house of glory, house of prayer, house of faith, house of God is how the Lord described it in section 88. It's all kind of there, that teaching and learning to the early saints was a consecrated activity. It was a form of worship. And we should take it really seriously, because it seems like the Lord took it really seriously. So writing the history of seminaries and institutes allowed me to explore those foundations, and then to kind of learn from all these figures of the past, the things that they had done, and the approaches that they took, and how they were able in their own eras, in their own time, to make the gospel relevant and to make it something that really could change a person's life.
Wow, that's fascinating. That is. I didn't know any of that. Okay, so take this big picture. Now you've kind of... Oh, please go ahead.
Oh, and I was just going to say that book by study and also by faith is in Gospel Library. I don't know if anybody reads it, but but it was so fun. It was so fun to put together, and it was kind of my love letter. It was like my love letter to gospel teaching. You know, I just got to work with so many gifted people, and again, there's some really good stuff in there. But we'll set it aside. Different project.
No, I love how you put that. Yeah, it is, and I love that you called it your love letter to gospel teaching. Like, that's really beautiful. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, but what it kind of is making me picture right now is that you've got this. Not just, you know, here I'm teaching and I'm learning from these great teachers, but you understand a little bit more about the history of teaching. How has that inspired you to kind of have this whole picture in your day to day? I'm teaching students sometimes the same thing several times. How does it, like, what does that do for you? How does that change your teaching?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some things in the history of teaching in the church that are timely, that sort of applied in their time. And then there's some things that are timeless, like J. Reuben Clark. He gave a talk called The Charted Course of the Church in Education. Mm-hmm. It was given, I think, in 1938. It's an absolute landmark address. Every teacher in the church should read it. But the main thing that I gathered from that was J. Reuben Clark said, we don't have to sneak up to them and whisper religion in their ear. Meaning we don't have to walk into a classroom and do a bunch of tricks to try and get them involved. He said they hunger for these things. They're desperate to know the things of the Spirit. And you can go into a gospel classroom making the assumption that what you have to say is relevant. It's the most relevant message that we have to deliver to people. It talks about, you know, the fears and the problems that we deal with in this life and how we manage them. And then the greatest fear that everybody has to manage, which is we're all going to die someday. What happens to us after that? And what type of life do we live after this? So, I mean, getting to read about, you know, some of the, there's a huge overlap between the great teachers of the church and the great leaders of the church, because teaching and leadership are so simultaneous to each other. Even in small group settings like a ward council, you can tell a good teacher that's there and can communicate clearly to people. That's a major skill set that our leaders need to have. And honestly, like looking at Joseph Smith's teaching style or Brigham Young's teaching style, which were totally different from each other, and then looking at David O. McKay and John A. Widsoe and Joseph Merrill and all these incredibly gifted teachers in the church that also were leaders was just super inspiring to me to kind of see their technique. Again, it's the main thing that we've been asked to do. And it's the main thing that I think the Savior does. You know, after the title Savior, which is the most common one I use for him, I think if you brought him in, he wouldn't say he was a carpenter, right? I think if you asked the Savior, well, what do you do for a living? He would say, I'm a teacher. There's that great talk by Jeffrey R. Holland, where he points out that in the garden, when Jesus was resurrected and Mary Magdalene saw him, the first title she used was Rabboni, a teacher. Mm-hmm. That's how we do all the speculation about Jesus and Mary Magdalene's relationship, right? But the term she used to define their relationship when she sees him and he's alive is, there's my teacher. He's back. Yeah. And we've all had a gospel teacher that really like affected us. And so I just see that as a through line, that God is a good teacher. I mean, it's interesting that in the Latter-day Saint conception of God, instead of God pronouncing the plan of salvation, we talk about a council in heaven, right, where I got to imagine a large part of the council was God saying, okay, I got a whiteboard here. Let me draw the circles and lines and explain the plan of salvation or something like that. That's our conception of God. He doesn't make pronouncements. He holds discussions. And he doesn't just tell us what to do. He sits there and says, let's reason together. Let's talk about this. I mean, that's a thread through Latter-day Saint scripture that's really rich. You think of the brother of Jared, where the Lord gives him instruction, teaches him, hey, here's how you make a boat so that you don't suffocate, but then says, okay, and let's figure out this light thing together. And then they have a discussion. It's teaching. On every level, it's teaching. And so that's such a vital skill to master, to be a disciple of Jesus Christ.
So let's talk about that kind of specifically because I've seen, and Julie, and I think Casey, you would agree that we've seen kind of a shift of how we teach the gospel, going from more, I'm going to tell you kind of things to discussion based. Can you talk about what you've seen over the years and what you see, where are we going with that?
Yeah, I'm really grateful for that shift, first of all, because I think it's more in line with what the Lord describes good teaching as in places like Section 50 and Section 88 of the Doctrine and Covenants. Now, that said, there's a tendency to overcorrect that direction, right?
Sure.
There's still going to be a person in the classroom. Section 88 still describes a teacher who's appointed to lead the discussion and who occasionally needs to provide context and explain the content so that the discussion is more rich. But yes, this when I was in seminaries and institutes, we used to say there's the sage on the stage and then there's a guide on the side. And again, the sage on the stage is a good model. In general conference, I'm not expecting President Oaks to get up and say, hey, what do you guys think about, you know, the afterlife? Because he's teaching, but he's the speaker. That's how general conference works. But I've also seen a lot of the leaders of the church in small group settings where they are leading discussions. I've seen Camille Johnson, the General Relief Society president, in small group settings, leading discussions, facilitating things, saying, actually, in my experience as a general authority, here's what I've seen and here's what I've witnessed. And there's a balance between the two. We can't overcorrect and emphasize discussion too much and provide too little explanation and guiding. But I think the bigger danger is that we just take over and talk for the entire hour because we're awesome and we know the subject better than anybody. And that does tend to sort of lead people to sort of unfocus, you know. Another challenge that we face is the lack of focus as well, to where an engaging discussion tends to get somebody away from their phone and causes them to commit to engage in it. Again, if you can tell a student something, that's wonderful. But if you can get the student to teach, if you can get them to say something, there's this like hierarchy that teachers refer to a lot. And again, if you want somebody to remember something, like the bottom of the hierarchy is you tell them. That has the lowest retention. The highest retention is you get them to teach it. And any gospel teacher can attest that in a normal lesson, the person that learned the most about the subject is the teacher because they had to get ready. So if you can flip that model and make your student the teacher and get them to engage and look directly at it, it's great. They have higher retention. They have higher conversion. And the power of what is being said tends to go into their heart deeper because they become the voice that the Spirit is using to teach. I can't remember a lot of what my seminary teachers did in high school, but I remember like when they asked me to do the devotional, usually what I said there sticks with me a little bit longer because I was the teacher. And so the discussion model is basically saying, hey, let's get you to be the teacher too, and let's give you something to do, and let's invite active learning, because in a small group format, that just really works a lot better when it comes to engagement, when it comes to being involved. And you see Jesus Christ do the same thing too, right? Like he was the master miracle maker, but he still takes aside his disciples and says, I'm going to give you the authority. I want you to go out and I want you to do the miracles. And them carrying out those acts for themselves makes it a deeper, more important experience that trains them later on. I mean, the Savior seemed to be okay with his disciples even excelling him in some senses. They talk in the book of Acts about how Jesus could heal people through touch, but Peter's shadow could heal people. And it seems like Jesus was okay with this, like, in fact, enthusiastic about it, because the idea is never to, like, make yourself the best person. It's to lift everybody around you and be lifted as everyone goes up.
Wow, that's like the ultimate definition of humility. It's that your goal as a teacher is to kind of take yourself out of the equation a little bit, right? And raise all of those around you. Have there been things that you have, like, as a teacher yourself, surrounded by these amazing teachers, stealing ideas from them, interviewing them. Are there some that have just absolutely stuck with you that have helped you to do that more effectively, to engage your students and to help make them the teachers?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And sometimes it's just a little phrase. Like we interviewed Brad Wilcox, and his subject was knowing your audience. And Brad had this phrase where he said, "You've got to find the loose brick."
Loose brick. Yeah, I heard that. I loved it.
Which basically is, you might have the most difficult student in the world, but if they're a brick wall and you feel like you just can't get through it, there's always going to be a little loose brick. And Brad told this story about a kid he taught who just had a total attitude and didn't want to be there. And one day, he was talking to the kid, and the kid mentioned that he likes skateboarding. And Brad started talking to him about skateboarding. Brad doesn't know the first thing about skateboarding, but the kid just started to go. Like, it was his loose brick. And all of a sudden, the kid went from hating what he was doing, because I think this was at an EFY, FSY session, to sharing his talent, to being in the talent show. Brad even like brought him back for other EFY sessions to have him demonstrate some of his skateboarding ability, and that broke through the wall. For me, I had a student that was really challenging, and I found out that his loose brick was, this is going to sound really weird, it's in the podcast though, his loose brick was My Little Pony. This
Yeah,
kid
oh yeah.
loved this kid loved the design and aesthetic of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. He called himself a brony. And so,
You know that term.
I don't know the first thing about My Little Pony, but every time he came in, I'd be like, "Hey, how's My Little Pony?" And be like, "I've made some new sketches. Check this out and take a look at it." And that brick kind of opened the floodgates, so that we were able to reach him. So many phrases from these teachers that kind of resonated in my mind. Hank Smith saying, "I know what teaching by the Spirit is. I don't know what teaching by the Spirit is, but I know what it isn't." Ryan Sharp borrowed from Neil A. Maxwell, where he basically said, "You know what? Give them memorable one-liners. Like, when you're designing your lesson, think in terms of short things." Like, I remember Robert Millet, who's one of the best teachers I've ever worked with, talking about the atonement and saying it's infinite and it's intimate, that it covers the entire universe, but it really only matters to one person at a time. And that is brilliant teaching, right? That's something infinite and intimate that I can remember easily, that captures so much about the atonement of Jesus Christ, and really brings home how powerful the atonement is, but how it really works on an individual level. And so, oh, you know what? Like I said, this was me geeking out to hear some of the best teachers, as someone who is a fan of teaching. One of the people we interviewed was Matt Richardson, who was in the General Sunday School presidency and has spoken in General Conference. And so he did our episode on teaching using the words of church leaders, which is challenging. A lot of people know how to use the scriptures to teach, but when you hand them a talk, they don't know what to do. And Matt talked about what it's like to prepare a talk for General Conference, and what the process
Cool.
is, and what thought goes into it, and what the other general authorities that he was counseling with told him as to what makes a good General Conference address. I didn't watch General Conference the same way after that
Yeah.
interview, because I saw the little things that they do, because this small group of people that speak in General Conference, and it's never more than 30, do interact with each other and do kind of like contact each other back and forth and say, "What are you doing? And how can I refine this?" So that was an incredible opportunity. And then, another one that comes to mind is Phil Allred, who's not a name very many people are aware of. He's a teacher that just joined our faculty from BYU, Idaho, but he has spent years researching one-on-one teaching. Like, Phil will say things like, "God gave me a classroom and an office, and they're both equally important." And when a student comes into his office, he sees it as one of the most important teaching opportunities that he has, and he goes into this mentoring process that he's developed, including all this research that comes from his own research, but also from secular scholars, to just say, "Hey, here's how one-on-one you can teach a person." And again, another major shift in the teaching in the church has been from church teaching to home teaching. Home-centered, church-supported,
Within
I
the
think
home,
is
yeah.
the phrase in the church. That was really useful for me, because I'm the sort of person that's more comfortable in front of 300 people than I am being alone in a car with one person.
I'm
And
with
yeah, like, give me a classroom with 30 people and I'm totally comfortable, but ask me to, you know, go on a car ride with someone that I don't know. And all of a sudden I get really nervous. It helped me understand how to talk to my kids, you know, and how to mentor them, because most of our home teaching, most of our teaching in the home is small audience, one-on-one. Find a moment, take advantage of it, and use it to teach something really valuable. So I'm thankful for that aspect of teaching as well. That's an upcoming episode. Yeah. I think that's one of our last episodes, which is just mentoring, which is a big part of teaching too.
I like that you brought up that teaching is in front of 300 and in front of one. And one of the things we do on Teaching Restored is talk about teaching. We try to hit a lot of different teaching scenarios. You're in the Sunday school classroom. You're in Relief Society, but you're also a parent teaching. You're also a friend teaching someone who isn't a member of the church. You're also on a podcast, or, you know, there's social media and you're teaching in that respect. I mean, there are so many different ways of teaching. Have you found that there are, I don't want to say maybe strengths or weaknesses to them or different ways of doing it, but have you really thought much about, well, I'm sure you thought a lot about it, but come up with a lot of any good insights as to teaching one direction, whether or teaching another venue or different type of people, or
yeah, that's life in the church, right? Is on a Sunday you can be teaching because you're giving the talk in sacrament meeting, and then as soon as you walk out of sacrament meeting, they're like, we need somebody to teach the 8-year-olds, their teacher's gone this week. And then the next Sunday you're teaching gospel doctrine, and then you're at home teaching come follow me to your family. And, you know, it's just teach, right? And there are some things universally that I think apply in any kind of teaching. And then there are some techniques that are specific to age group and audience. For instance, one universal thing I would say in any type of teaching is to be authentic, to be yourself, to not try and imitate another teacher. I'm not Dallin H. Oakes, and I don't have his mind. He's one of my favorite teachers, but I don't approach things the way he does, where he like legally breaks down a subject. Right. Like one of my favorite President Oakes talks is he was trying to answer the question of, are we saved? And he's like, actually, there's 9 types of salvation. And that's just not how my brain works. and so I can't be Dallin H. Oakes. I've got to be Casey Griffiths. And I would say, whether you're speaking sacrament meeting, or you're teaching the 8-year-olds, or you're teaching gospel doctrine, or you're leading a church history tour, one thing I would say to a person is just be your authentic self. Like, be what you are, and play to your strengths, and use your own talents that God has given you, and don't try to be somebody else. A second universal principle I would say, and I'm stealing this from someone in the McKay School of Education, whose name escapes me right now, but he would always say, the lesson is inside the learner, which is, In any type of teaching, a major thing you should be thinking about is, how is what I'm going to say going to bring something out from a person? Because I got to be honest with you, we have done all kinds of surveys and studies on our students here at BYU about what makes good teaching. You know, we're trying to quantify it and bottle it, but almost all the time it comes down to 2 things. One, I like my teacher, and 2, the content is relevant. And so saying the lesson is inside the learner is you looking at what you have to teach and saying, what about this is going to impact or bring something out of my student that will help them kind of see things in a different perspective. And so, I mean, when I'm teaching an 8-year-old class, because that was one of my favorite callings, actually, is I taught the 8-year-olds. The pandemic ended that. I was devastated. But was to sit there and say, okay, how do I take a really sort of broad theological principle, like the 3 degrees of glory, and make it relevant for an 8-year-old? How do I communicate this to them? The lesson's inside the learner. You think about their perspective, you look at it the way they look at it, and then you try and adjust the lesson so that it's meeting their needs. I guess another really, really broad principle that works in all kinds of teaching is to trust in the word. There are times with a group of eight-year-olds, for instance, where we might think, I can't quote the scriptures. They're going to be bored out of their mind. When in reality, there's stuff in the scriptures that is powerful and pertinent, even for somebody as young as they are. Now, I'm not going to sit there and say, let's examine the block together and what's the exegesis, you know, with an eight-year-old audience. I can't even do that with a high school audience. I had a friend who, you know, explained exegesis to his seminary classroom, and he had a kid say, exegesis, you need to find a Jesus, you know, kind of thing. but there's power in the word. There just is. And sometimes we don't put enough trust in it. But I would say, too, another corollary is that there's that old classic Bruce R. McConkie quote where he quotes the scriptures and he says, you may think that these words were written by other people, but they're now mine. You know, the Holy Spirit is testifying to them. It's okay to take the scriptures then and add in your own experiences. I would say another universal principle of teaching is that your own life stories, your own experiences are powerful, and that your own life is a sermon where God is teaching you things that he wants you to teach other people. And so I try to, you know, also be thinking in my mind of experiences I've had that might find relevance to them and adjust it based on that. So when I'm teaching an FSY audience, I talk a lot more about my high school years than I do when I'm talking to my college audience. And when I'm teaching college students, I'm trying to put my headspace back into when I was an undergraduate and the sort of things I was dealing with and how the scriptures or what scriptures helped me the most there. Like one of my most important teachers was a guy named Todd Parker, who taught at BYU for years and years and years. And I remember Todd shared that scripture from 2 Nephi 33 that I glory in plainness, I glory in truth, I glory in my Jesus, for he hath redeemed my soul from hell. And Todd just built an entire thing around the words, my Jesus. And that was so powerful to me because I grew up in a small town where everybody knew who I was, and then went to BYU, and suddenly I was a small fish in a big pond. And I felt like a number in a lot of my interactions. And I also felt like I was surrounded by so many gifted people that nobody would want to know a thing that I had to say. Todd saying, the way Nephi thought of Jesus wasn't as the Savior of the world, but as my Jesus, really connected the gospel for me and made me realize that, yeah, the Savior can teach 2,500 men, women, and children. But when he first met with the Nephites, he didn't ask for group participation. He asked to meet with them one by one. And that still resonates with me. So there's some universal things, but there's also a lot that comes to you and the individual gifts you have and what you have to bring to the table that you shouldn't be shy about sharing. There's a guy in my ward who he's a plant scientist. He studied botany his entire life. And that guy really shines when he's talking about botany. And I had no idea there was so much about botany in the scriptures. But one time he gave a really fascinating lesson where he talked about olive trees. And and I was with him, you know, because, again, here's a person who's passionate, who loves what he does. And I'm getting to see him cook. I'm getting to see him do his thing. It was incredible. So, I mean, look inside yourself as well and say, hey, what do I care about? And what am I good at? And everybody has some kind of gift. The scriptures teach us that, like, to every person is giving a gift from God. It's just a question of finding that and then using it to help other people.
That's amazing. I love that you emphasized the authenticity piece, because I think that that's something that we sometimes forget. We try to be other people. We try to emulate other teachers. And I have this question kind of brewing. I don't know how to ask it exactly, but just you've learned so much. You've studied so much about teaching. I'd be scared that it would take me to a place of conscious incompetence where I'm so painfully aware of the things that I stink at, that I might get a little bit overwhelmed. So to someone who is studying about teaching because they're trying to learn how to teach for the first time, that feels super inadequate, that feels kind of overwhelmed by all of these podcasts that, you know, they could potentially go and listen to and all of the principles and tips and tricks, to those that are feeling overwhelmed, what would you say?
Great question. And I would say, hey, there's a certain element to it where you do, and you don't overthink it. I have one teacher that I teach with. I wish I could have gotten him on this podcast. His name's Stefan Tager, and he is one of the most gifted teachers I know. But one time I was sitting there, and Stefan was trying to figure out what makes a teacher funny. Like, this is how deep this guy is. And he was sitting there and he goes, comedy is the juxtaposition of two things that don't belong together. And I was like, you can't define what comedy is. You're funny or you're not. Don't do this. And he was like, no, go in your classroom and juxtapose two things that don't belong together and they will laugh. And I was like, you're a robot, man. So I went into my classroom and I was supposed to teach about Ecclesiastes, you know, where the writer of Ecclesiastes has a lot of wealth, but isn't happy. And I told my class, like, so imagine King Solomon coming down the road and he's in like a huge Lexus and he's booming like rap music and it's like, and everybody started laughing because I juxtaposed two things that don't belong together. And I was like, dang it.
He's right.
He just quantified what funny is, and I hate him for that. at the same time, too, he thinks deeply about his teaching, and he gets really good at it. But sometimes a teacher like Stefan thinks so much, is so much inside his head that he doesn't just go and do. Sometimes you just jump in both feet and don't overthink it. Like Stefan's process is comedy at the juxtaposition of two things that don't belong together. And my thought process when I go into teach a class is dun da da dun da da dun da dun da teaching. You know, I'm not thinking about anything. I just opening my mouth. One of my student evaluations said, I love Brother Griffiths, but I think sometimes he doesn't know how his sentences are going to end when he starts them.
That's classic.
And oh gosh, I mean, so I would say Stefan's strength is his analysis and his thought, and my strength is my improvisation. And we both play to our strengths, right? So don't overthink it too. Have faith in yourself and have faith in the word and have faith that your calling as a teacher, whether the calling came from your bishop who's asking you to teach the young women, or whether your calling came from God who asked you to be a father or mother to little children, is something that comes from on high. So you can go into a classroom having faith and not being perfect, and also recognizing that you can do things that nobody else can do, that nobody can do things quite the way you do them. Mm-hmm. And that's good. So have a little faith in yourself, and by extension, have faith in the Spirit, that it's going to be there, that if you're prepared and you're ready, you shouldn't have any fear, because miracles are going to happen, and they do happen. They happen in the classroom all the time.
That's good. That's awesome. Love it. One of the things that I have a little, I was going to say a little fetish with, but I don't think that that's the right way to say it, but something that really intrigues me. It intrigues me, at least, is when I go through Teaching in the Savior's Way, or in Preach My Gospel, a lot of it I feel like it's saying to me, to be a good teacher, focus on yourself and prepare yourself. There's a lot. I mean, I'm really surprised. I would think, oh, you're going to open up the manual and talk, and it's going to teach you about how to teach. It's actually, a lot of it is saying, yeah, we'll get to that, but what I really want you to focus on is yourself and your not just preparation of a lesson, but preparation of who you are and your receptivity to the Spirit and studying and learning yourself. And so there's a lot of emphasis put on that. Can you talk a bit about that, having written some curriculum as well and going through, I don't know, probably how many teaching in service lessons yourself?
Yeah. I mean, individual preparation is sort of, this is the way I usually phrase it. Our preparation is the sacrifice we make to show God that we're sincere, so that he can help us. Because there have been situations where I've showed up with zero preparation and the lesson still worked. But usually it's because I didn't know I was going to be teaching that day. Right. When you do have time to prepare. If you don't take advantage of that, you're going to struggle. And you're going to suffer a little bit because you didn't do what was necessary. And another thing, I know we keep coming back to this theme, but you're the lesson, right? So much of gospel teaching is a person getting up and sharing their life and their experiences and being a good role model, an example to people. I know that teachers aren't supposed to hold themselves up as an individual light, and I don't try and do that either, but I at least try to hold myself up as a decent person, you know, as someone who's wrestling with things just like my students are, and can empathize with them because I have two steps forward and one step back in my gospel development, that I'm struggling all the time. When I prepare, you know, a big part of it is I familiarize myself with the text, but I also do so early enough that I have time to kind of let it gestate in my mind. So if I know that I'm going to be teaching the Elders Quorum in 1 week, I don't try and read the lesson 5 minutes before I go in. I try and read the lesson a week before and start thinking, oh, well, that's an interesting idea. That might be a great thing to discuss, and let it kind of percolate in there so that when I get there a week later, I've sort of immersed myself in the subject and know what I'm talking about when I get in there. Again, one of the themes that came up in all these interviews was that you spend a lot of time preparing, but you should also be prepared to just throw that away too if the Spirit takes you in a different direction. And that can be a difficult thing too, because I've known some really good teachers who, especially when they're using PowerPoint, will have somebody bring up a good point and there's really some good stuff happening, and then they're like, well, we got to get to the next slide, right? Or we're not going to make it through all my material if we don't keep going. And they end that fruitful discussion so that they can move on to the next quote or whatever. Nobody cares if you get through all your material. It doesn't matter. And to be honest with you, you know, when you go into a gospel doctrine classroom, you're not going to get through all of section 88 of the Doctrine and Covenants. That's ridiculous. That's impossible. Mm-hmm. What you're going to get through is several well thought out principles. And so, again, it's this paradox where you should do as much as you can to possibly prepare, but then you should be ready to kind of set it aside if the Spirit takes you a different direction, recognizing that your preparation wasn't in vain. Your preparation was you basically showing to God that you're sincere and that you really do want to have His Spirit and you're willing to work to get it. So again, there's a lot of paradoxes like that too, where preparation is great, but preparation isn't the end goal. The end goal is to have the Spirit when you go in to teach, which preparation does help with a lot. Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah. I love that. I have one more burning question that is kind of on my mind. And as you were talking about all the preparation, and Kev, you asked the question, I think part of what you were also getting at is just that we really have to invest. And I remember, Casey, when I was listening, I kind of had this phrase popping into my head. It's like, prepare so you can pivot. Like, that really is what it's about, is prepare so that you can go wherever they need to go. But you're not going to have material to go there if you haven't prepared to go there. And I was thinking about, and this is going to feel like a tiny bit of a departure, but it's on my mind. I've been thinking about some people that I know right now who have decided to leave the church, or some friends that I have who have family members who have decided to take a step away, and how anxious they are to teach them. And so I've got this one friend I'm thinking of in particular who studies the scriptures like you would not believe. Like, she feasts and feasts and feasts. And then she's like, and I want to share this, and I want to share this. And she's like, is this a prompting to share this? And then her kid is like basically giving her the bird, you know, don't send me church stuff, Mom. Come on. Like, and so it's a tough thing. And so I think part of you've tackled in Church History Matters a lot of sensitive topics. And I imagine that part of why you're able to do that is not just because of the study that you've done, but also some of the experiences that you've had having a conversation with somebody who might feel differently than you about said topic. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm curious. Do you have any counsel for people who are interacting with and wanting to keep peace with? So they want to speak truth, but they want to keep peace. You don't want to hide from those conversations. Those are teaching conversations? Do you have any counsel for them as they approach those?
Yeah. First of all, timing means a lot, right? There's a tendency that we have to want a person that's struggling in their faith, a person that, you know, like you said, is taking a step back from the church, to want to just give them the answer, to just come up and say, here's the answer. Or we have people all the time say that they've taken something from Church History Matters because we've dealt with a controversial subject and said, oh, this podcast will answer all your questions. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work unless they're prepared. Right. And so when you're dealing with someone who's struggling in that way, a lot of it is being prepared for the right moment. And so Rich Robbins, who's a teacher I really admire, used to have this analogy where he talked about, you know, the Hoover Dam and all the water behind it and how the water fills up. And every once in a while, they have to open the flow and the water shoots out for a half mile. He said it wouldn't do that if there wasn't all of this water behind it that had been accumulating for years and years. He called it the dam analogy. Maybe you shouldn't share that. I would say the same thing. Like, it might not work if you have a loved one that's struggling to go in and just overwhelm them with information, because what you're doing is just arguing. And that's what anti-Mormons do too, right? They just overwhelm somebody with information to where they despair, and then their faith starts to get hurt. But what you can do is have yourself be prepared, and then in the moment when they're ready, you can have a real opportunity to reach them and change their heart. So it might be combining a lot of those things, finding that loose brick like Brad Wilcox talks about, or praying for or seeking inspired moments where you can share with them. I think one story I told in the podcast was when I was an EFY counselor, I was really young. I had these three boys in one of my EFY groups that were just like terrible. like the only way I could see to help them would be to kill them and do baptisms for the dead. Like, honestly, they were just the worst, and they were mean to everybody, and they were constantly doing like mean-spirited pranks and everything, and they would slip out of class and I had to go find them, and it was just like a major headache. So one day I'm in the Wilkinson Center, and they've ditched class. And so I have to leave my co-counselor there and go find them. And I find them in the basement, and they're sitting there with these two college-age kids. And one of them was gesturing, like he was arguing, you know, like he was really passionate about something. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're harassing the BYU student body now. And I walked up, and when I got into hearing range, I heard him go, and that's how I know the Book of Mormon's true, in spite of all the things you've said. And I immediately, what's going on here? And I found out that the two college-age people they were talking to were missionaries from another church that had come to BYU campus specifically to deliver anti-Mormon material, and had been shut down by a couple of returned missionaries. Instead found these 14-year-olds and thought, well, there's a vulnerable audience. And the 14-year-olds immediately like took him on, right? And I didn't know that reservoir was there. And after that, those kids, like I showed up and, you know, I said a couple things, and immediately these missionaries from another faith sort of beat a hasty retreat because they didn't want to deal with a return missionary. But after that, those kids were with me. And we had some sacred special experiences. Like Thursday night at EFY and FSY is when you testify the atonement. And one of them opened up and shared that his dad had passed away not too long ago. And we were able to testify to him that because of Jesus Christ, he'd see his dad again, and that he could have a happy family, and that his dad was still with him and watching over him. I couldn't have planned or anticipated that, but I was ready when it happened. I'm happy to say that, at least I was ready. And so when it comes to dealing with your loved one, remember, God cares about them too. And the Lord is going to do what he can to get them into a place where you can reach them. Now, the Lord cannot and will not, I should say will not, force them. That just is a violation of free agency. But if you pay close attention, you'll find little teaching moments where you can sort of touch their heart or find that loose brick that allows you to kind of get inside and help them see and understand it. Like the other day, my podcast partner and I were being interviewed by a Protestant pastor. And it was about plural marriage. And he was, you know, asking us about plural marriage, which is a tough subject, right? And at a certain point, instead of talking about plural marriage, I started talking about eternal marriage. And I just sort of said to him, like, you know, do you believe that you and your wife will still be married after this life? And it shifted the whole conversation. And that was my way to sort of soften his heart. He wasn't attacking us. He wasn't being mean or anything. But it was clear that he saw the principle as kind of icky. That was an opening for me to say, hey, eternal marriage means that we do embrace some form of plural marriage. You know, life is complicated, and someone like Russell M. Nilsson lost a spouse that he loved very dearly, and then fell in love again. It opened the door for me to have a much more civilized discussion, open discussion, for him to kind of see this thing that he'd been told his entire life was wrong, had a basis in scriptures and a basis in human relationships. And so, I mean, you keep yourself ready, and then pray for the moments to come and be ready when that moment comes and be ready to recognize it. And that can happen in the classroom with a couple hundred people there, but most often it happens in small groups, in small settings where you just have a really good moment. And if you seize the moment, it can make a huge impact on a person's life.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Well, this has been really great to get some words of wisdom and thoughts about how to teach and about teaching overall. Thank you very much for joining us, Casey. We appreciate it.
And yeah, thanks.
And we got to make sure. Tell us about your podcasts again, the two that you have.
And where to find it.
So the podcast, I'm here to kind of let people know, because you guys are doing teaching, and bless you for doing that. I have been looking for somebody to do this for so long, so thank you. The podcast I'm talking about is called Why Religion Presents Gospel Teaching. And so if you just search for Why Religion, we're a series that's part of Why Religion. So it's kind of like a little subset where Why Religion has been going for 3 or 4 years now, and there's over 100 episodes. But there's this 11-episode streak that's just being released over this summer that starts with Clark Gilbert, who's the Church Commissioner of Education, and Chad Webb, who's the head of seminaries and institutes, talking about the importance of teaching. And then it's going to go through various subjects, like Emily Bell Freeman and Brad Wilcox talk about knowing your audience. And then we've got people like Ken Alford and Mark Pace, who was the General Sunday School president when this was produced, talking about planning a lesson. Then we've got Teaching by the Spirit, that's Hank Smith and Ryan Sharp. And then other lessons coming up, like how do you teach from a conference talk? How do you resolve difficult issues? That's one thing that we talked about here. Janet Erickson and Brian Mead, both amazing teachers, talk about that. One-on-one teaching. The Dean of Religion at BYU, Scott Esplin, talks about applying a lesson, along with Susan Porter, who's the general primary president. So there's some heavy hitters on here, but the idea isn't that this podcast goes on forever. It was that we have 11 episodes that you can listen to at your own speed and your own time and feel like you've been through a teaching seminar, because we spend so much time in the church mastering the content that we sometimes don't talk about delivering the content. And I have seen some very, very smart people, you know, that know the content better than anybody, but they don't know how to communicate it well. And that does sort of torpedo their teaching. It stops them from being as effective as they can. So you can know Greek and Hebrew, you can know every factoid from church history, but if you don't know how to communicate it well, it'll just kind of stay in here and won't be a blessing to the church. So I'm hoping that a lot of seminary teachers, Sunday school presidents, anybody in the church, primary presidents, because we did have Susan Porter talk a lot about primary children and age recognition and what they're ready to do cognitively, will see this as a resource that they can help for their teachers. So, I mean, my sincere hope is that my fellow Sunday school presidents out there, when they get a new teacher and they have difficulty connecting with them, can at least say, hey, listen to this podcast series, and it'll get you through the basics to know how to do what you need to do. And so gospel teaching. The other podcast I do is called Church History Matters. Right now we're doing the Doctrine and Covenants, but like you mentioned, Julie, the focus for us is a little different than other Come Follow Me podcasts. We focus on the context. We won't do a deep dive into what was going on when the revelation was received, the content, the controversies. So if there's something that's difficult about a revelation, we kind of go there. That's sort of our thing. We've done series in the past where we focused on some really difficult subjects like race and the priesthood, plural marriage, different accounts of the first vision, and we're going to keep doing that. But this year we're going through the Doctrine and Covenants controversies, and then the last thing is the consequences, like how did this revelation affect the church? And again, I work with a marvelous partner, Scott Woodward, who's a professor up at BYU Idaho, who's one of the most gifted people I've ever had the chance to work with. So I hope this stuff is helpful. Again, we've just been given so many gifts and this technology where we can reach people in ways we haven't before. So if this stuff sounds like it would be useful to you, I just hope you'll take advantage of it. The person that has benefited the most from all this, to be honest with you, is me. Like, I feel so selfish that I got a chance to sit down, you know, with Emily Bell Freeman and pick her brain about her process, because she's amazing. And then I got to do it, you know, I did this all last summer, just every week I was with somebody recording. And then, you know, some of them I got to go to lunch with and sit down and pick their brains further. And it just really helped me as a teacher be a lot better than I was, because I'm still growing. You know, I still want to grow up and be Brad Wilcox someday. and I'll probably outgrow that.
And I can vouch, because I am I don't want to say fan because it sounds stupid, but I feel like I've been really blessed by both podcasts. It's been, like I said, I stumbled upon the Why Religion one, but I've been consuming Church History Matters for some time, and it has blessed my life as well. So thank you. And I recognize that you don't want to make this about you, but the fact that you have lived your life in a way and studied so hard to be able to do all of this, thank you for being willing to share and being so abundant with your insights. It's been a blessing to a lot of people, including me.
Oh, thanks. And thanks to both of you too for what you're doing. Yeah. It's a great thing.
Thank you. And for those listening, if you would please share this so they can have access to these other podcasts that Casey is doing as well. Huge amount of resources and wonderful discussion in there. I'm loving going through it right now. I was looking at past episodes. Okay, what past episodes do I want to go through? There are so many topics to go through in the Church History Matters ones. It blew me away. So I'm really excited to go through those. And I look forward to the Why Religion ones that you're doing as well. So thanks again, Casey. We appreciate you being here.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care.